Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
The refrain that sticks in my head from when I was a child was her saying, "Hannah, if anything happened to you, you could be in a terrible accident and all your looks could go in a second."
Yeah.
And if you only are preoccupied with that defining you, in that moment you will lose everything. So it's so much more important that you're a clever and brave and kind person.
Hello and welcome back to Beautiful Lives, and thank you so much to everyone who tuned in last week. This week's guest is writer, columnist and podcaster Dolly Alderton. Now, aside from Dolly's enormous success and colossal talent, one of the things that singles Dolly out is how much everyone loves her. In fact, it got to the point where I could predict that when I told anyone I'd interviewed Dolly for this podcast, literally anyone from any walk of life, they'd immediately respond with, "I love her and want to be her friend, she is nice in real life," or something to that effect. I'm very pleased to say that she absolutely is. And during the sunny morning that my dog Monty and I spent with her at her flat in Camden, I was both charmed and slightly disarmed, actually, by how very warm and open she is in real life. So on this episode, Dolly talks about the horrors of being called ugly on MSN Messenger, the agony of adolescence when she felt that she was in beauty purgatory, and then some happier things like the joy of a brilliant perfume and getting her hair just right, and realising she didn't have to look like a model to be considered to be attractive or happy within herself. Now, before you listen to the episode, I just wanted to add that you may hear one or the other of us say, "Ah, that too," a few times or something like that. And that's because, by sheer bizarre coincidence, Dolly and I both grew up in Stanmore, then went to rugby school and have gone on to work in journalism. So that's explained. Here's Dolly Alderton on her beautiful life. So let's talk about your childhood a bit. So what are your earliest memories of beauty and the role that that played in your household?
I had a very, very glamorous and beautiful mother. I know everyone says that about their mother, but my mum really was a corker. Mm-hmm. And
she blonde?
She was blonde for most of her. She was a model, and mm-hmm. for all of her time modelling, she was blonde. And then early 30s, she was blonde. And then just before she met my dad, she went scarlet red.
Wow.
Yeah, she's a very, very striking woman. And I must say, the only thing that eclipses her outer beauty is her inner beauty, as cheesy as that sounds. She's a very, very kind person. Mm-hmm. And so the beauty thing, it was very prevalent in my house growing up.
Did you feel like it was important for you to be beautiful?
I do think about this a lot. Thank you, therapy. about the impact of what it was to have a mother like that.
Yes.
I have to say, I think I was very fortunate in that my mum was super aware of it, and she never wanted me to feel like my looks were where the value
right.
and treasure in me lay.
Yeah.
And she really succeeded, actually. She was like, I remember she'd have a friend round who was talking about a diet she was on, and I remember my mum saying, like, "We don't talk about diets in front of Hannah."
That's very aware of, you know, what was that, the 90s? So that was before people were really talking about that kind of thing. So she
she's a strident feminist, my mum, and she saw what beauty, what the pressure of beauty can do to the models. She ended up running her own modelling agency.
Oh, did she? Okay.
And she saw horror stories of what happened to those women there. And she loves fashion, my mum. She loves the creativity of it and the playfulness of beauty and whatever. And she always said to me, "That's fine, have fun with it, that's okay." But constantly the refrain that sticks in my head from when I was a child was her saying, "Hannah, if anything happened to you, you could be in a terrible accident, you could be caught in a fire, something, or, you know, could have some terrible disease, and all your looks could go in a second."
Yeah.
And if you only are preoccupied with that defining you, in that moment you will lose everything. So it's so much more important that you're a clever and brave and kind person. So yeah. That was something that she really did hammer home to me, and I did carry that. So beauty was very prevalent in my house, and it was there to be enjoyed. And obviously I was aware growing up that people responded and reacted to my mum in a certain way. And when she went into a room, there was a certain reaction.
It's slightly unavoidable when you're around someone beautiful to see the alchemy, as it were, that has an atmosphere. People behave differently.
Exactly. Something I've noticed, and she'll hate me for saying this, is that my mum was always late when I was growing up.
Okay.
And it's something that I have inherited from her, much to the annoyance of everyone in my life.
How late do you think is okay to be late?
Now, I've changed my mind. I used to think, like, anything within an hour, that was, like, a catchment. And, but I just don't get bothered when people are late for me. So I always, in my head, would be like, well, just read a fucking book.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I didn't realise for some people it's very disrespectful. And, you know, it is.
Yeah.
But I noticed with my mum, she's got away with it her whole life, because she's had
she's
this,
beautiful,
like, charming, gorgeous, scatty thing.
Yeah.
And I have realised that I do not have the charm or looks to carry it off like my mum did.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you are aware of that. But as I said, she did a very good job on me of kind of hammering home this stuff that's really important as a woman and human to cultivate in yourself growing up.
So what are the products you've said L'Oreal, L'Oreal Elnett, is that right? Is that by L'Oreal? I don't know why.
Yes, it is.
Okay,
it
fine, Elnett, and also the perfumes and things. So that's kind of a very multi-sensory, childlike memory of beauty, isn't it? That you smell it and you see it and all of that, and you can, you know, I'm imagining furs and things like that. Not necessarily fur, but
she wasn't Joan Collins.
No, but you know, that kind of vibe, and it being that time as well, like the late 80s sort of thing.
Yeah, and she was like, she liked, you know, she was like, I suppose we all have this with our mothers when we look back, it's like the striped blusher.
Oh, yeah.
And the eyeshadow to the eyebrows.
Yeah.
And yeah, she did. It was like a very strong template, and she has these very big eyes that she kind of loved winging out. But I do remember those scents of her makeup. Even I remember her lipstick had a very perfumed smell that you don't get anymore. But I found it beguiling.
Yeah.
I loved all that.
So when did it come into play for you then? At what age were you thinking, I'm going to start embellishing the way I look?
Really young. From like, with felt-tip pens to...
Oh, God.
My parents were very strict, actually, with me about... they were so keen for me not to grow up.
Do you have siblings?
Fast. Yeah, I've got a little brother.
Okay, but you were the woman, so...
Yeah, they were just keen. They were fine with me, like, playing around with that stuff in the home.
Mm.
But they were quite strict about when I could get my ears pierced or put makeup on or whatever growing up, which I'm quite grateful for. But when did I start? Probably when I was about 13, they started letting me wear makeup.
What did you reach for straight away?
Mascara.
From
now until cradle to tomb, it's going to be mascaras.
But I wonder... So my question with that is that when you get to a certain age, beauty either becomes about hiding things. So most teenagers have bad skin and then they're reaching for concealers.
Yeah.
Or about enhancing things. And actually, it's quite nice to hear that you thought, I've got nice eyes, I'll play them up.
Yeah.
You know, rather than feeling that you needed to change something.
No. And also I would often, you know, I've always had quite a love of, I'm quite nostalgic, and I always had a love of a certain silhouette of beauty with women, particularly the 60s and the 70s. And the 70s was when my mum was modelling, and there were lots of kind of very glam photos of her.
Mm-hmm.
So I often, very young, would say to mum, can you do my makeup like this picture?
Would she do it?
Yeah. She loved doing it.
Yeah.
And as I said, normally no one would be benefiting it other than my sofa watching Kenan and Kel.
God.
But that was...
I'd forgotten about Kenan and Kel.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
God, Nickelodeon.
I never looked like a teenager. Like, I had quite big boobs and wide hips from a very young age. I was like 6 foot tall from a very young age.
Was that from your mum?
Yeah, well, both sides. Okay. Yeah, they're both pretty tall. And I just looked like a mad teenager. I looked older than I was. As I said, I was quite big. I carried quite a lot of weight when I was a teenager that I didn't lose until I kind of went to boarding school, then university. So I didn't look, and also I always wanted to be older growing up. So, like, I loved, like, watching old films. I wanted to be, like, glamorous. I wanted to be sensual. I wanted to be sophisticated.
Who were you looking up to? Was there a particular...
You know, I was watching Doris Day films and Audrey Hepburn films. And I wanted to be, like... I didn't want to look like a teenage girl. So yeah. I didn't want to look like a kind of skinny, young...
Yeah.
Yeah, I was the girl that was, like, vintage shopping, you know, for, like, mad prom dresses.
And then
and
going
stuff
to Pizza
like
Express
that.
In Stanmore.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And curling my hair to more like Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
So, like, I didn't suit
right.
both psychologically and physically the state of adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
And I just held out faith that one day my aesthetic would make more sense.
Right.
When I was older.
It's incredibly wise as a teenager to think that. I mean, it's extraordinary that you even had that understanding of yourself, because most teenagers go through a phase where there's a lot of conflict, and it sounds like there wasn't really that for you. You sound quite self-aware as a teenager.
Well, I still hated the way I looked, because boys just did not get it at all.
Did they not? So
no, not at all. And a lot of boys called me fat or ugly. And
to your face?
On MSN Messenger.
Oh, God.
But the funny thing is as well, with me growing up, with my relationship to my face and my body, is that I remember, because I had parents that were so wildly in love with me, and I only realise now what a great privilege that is and what an amazing start in life that gives you. You know, they just thought, and it's not that they were convincing themselves, they truly believed and believe to this day that I am the best person alive, including me and my brother.
Amazing.
They just think we're brilliant.
Yeah.
Which is lovely, but it does end up with both me and my brother have anxiety, because I think when you intersect that with real life, things can be quite...
But it's a better way to go. It's better to feel strong within yourself and the rest of the world doesn't get how fabulous you are.
Yeah, exactly. It was quite a strange moment, because I remember thinking, like, oh, I have, like, quite a nice face and I look all right.
Yeah.
And then I remember the first time a boy told me when I was about 12 that I was like, oh, God, it was a horrible moment. I remember him saying, you're as fat as a pig, ugly as a... can't remember what he said. I remember being like...
Imaginative insult.
Oh, my God. Maybe I'm not attractive. And it was weird because I hadn't had that thought before.
Yeah.
Because it had been so instilled in me that I was just clever and funny and lovely the way I am with nice hair and whatever. I hadn't even computed it. So I was just like, it was quite a shocking moment. I remember being like, oh God, maybe there's something wrong with how I look. I remember a girl said it to me once at school, how fat and ugly I was. And I remember being like, God, all these people, this is weird.
This is so strange. Why can't they see what
this
I
is
see?
So strange, yeah. And it wasn't like an arrogance. It was more just like I was quite bewildered. I was like, oh, maybe my parents have been lying to me. Who knew parents can be loving and say things
that they don't,
that maybe isn't the, you know, maybe I'm not the most amazing person alive.
Yeah.
So, that was interesting. But maybe that was what, maybe their love is what instilled me with a sense of, one day this will be okay.
But it's the value. I mean, that's a great thing for your parents to do to you. Value yourself in the right ways. And, you know, to be told you're beautiful, and A, you are, but also, you know, like, it's a good thing to give your child.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
And I personally really believe that most people are quite beautiful. I feel like it's just finding the look that suits you and the kind of way of presenting yourself. So later on, you then went to boarding school. Again, both went to the same boarding school.
So funny.
It's so strange. Rugby school in Warwickshire. My experience of that when I got there was that, so we, again, both went for sixth form. So there were already lots of girls there, but the boys had sort of had their run of them for 3 years.
Yeah,
and
it was a meat market. Yeah.
Thirsty for fresh blood.
Yeah.
And in you come and this is not the culture of the school. It's a great school. But the sense of it is that you are being judged the minute you walk in.
Oh, 100%.
To see what level of good looking you are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Graded around.
Graded, yeah. And in some cases, actually, I've heard. How did you feel about that?
So funny. I went to rugby. I, as I said, desperate to be grown up. I really wanted to live away from home. Mm. Not that home life was lovely. I wanted to...
But you were desperate to be a grown up.
Desperate to be, yeah, exactly. And I was desperate to be around proper real life boys.
Mm.
And I remember the first night that we got to rugby, We had like an induction, like that evening there was like a talk for the sixth form.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a deb party. You know, we were all like, this is the coming out for like the new fresh bloods. So we all got to look great. So we all put all the girls in my house. We all got dressed up and we all did each other's makeup.
What did you look like at that point?
I was still pretty big. Okay. I was still probably a size 16.
Long blonde hair?
Long brown hair.
Okay.
Far too much makeup.
What kind of makeup?
Eye makeup. Right. Masses of eye makeup.
Do you remember the products you used at the time?
Yeah, it was always Rimmel Black Kohl, Maybelline mascara, Great Lash mascara that my mum had recommended to me. Tons of bronzer, and then a sort of kind of pearl and shine sort of Tipex.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, very sexy.
Of the time.
And I remember sitting there and feeling so assessed by all these boys. And then I was like, again, I think I was like, surely there'll be someone here who fancies
me. Yeah, someone will want to get off with me.
Turns out there wasn't.
Really?
No. And I remember my first, again, I've written about this in my book.
Yeah.
In my first politics lesson, it was like 10 boys and like two girls.
Yeah.
Two of the girls were in the class. And there was a boy who I won't name, who actually is now engaged to my friend. Uh-huh. And he has since apologised to this and says he cannot recall doing it. He was sort of the most good-looking boy in our year.
Was he in the rugby team?
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
And his older brother had been... You'll know his older brother, actually. I'll tell you the name afterwards.
Okay.
Had been at the school. And he was famous on campus because his nickname was Zeus.
Okay.
Because he was so attractive.
Okay.
And this boy sent a note to me down the table with like a heart on it.
Mm.
And I couldn't believe my luck. So I was like, oh my God, I'm getting a love note from this dream.
This gorgeous guy, my ship's in.
Opened the note and it was a drawing of an orc from Lord of the Rings.
No.
And underneath there was an arrow saying, you look like this.
Oh my God. That's horrific.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. It was very embarrassing.
I was not...
Weirdly, I remember finding it quite funny. I think I used humour as a defence. I think the way I made friends... And I had a lot of boy friends at rugby.
Mm.
And I think the way I did that was because I knew... I wasn't sure as hell what it wasn't going to be from the way I looked. It would be for making them laugh. So I think I told that story quite a lot, actually, to make people laugh.
But did you feel... Did that affect your sense of self-worth at all? Or were you just... Did you just think, oh, hey, this is the way it is?
I think I just decided, I can't explain, I always knew that there would be some point in my life I would be sexy.
Yeah.
I knew I would when I was more grown up.
So a lot of self-belief again.
Turns out I was. Yeah, sorry, I'm not like some walking sex bomb. As in, people have found me attractive. Yeah. I knew that one day a man or some men would understand what I was about. So it was upsetting, but I just had this innate sense that I just didn't make sense to teenage boys.
But you said that you were using humour as a defence mechanism.
Yes, yeah.
And you later on wrote comedy, or you were a stand-up comedian, is that right?
Oh God, very short foray. Okay, yeah.
Very short time. But you're funny and you're using your brain.
Mm.
Was it at this point that you thought, I'm going to be a writer?
Yeah, I was obsessed. I was gripped by it. But that's the minute I got to rugby, it was like an obsession. And actually, a lot of the writing I did at rugby, I started a blog then, my first blog that ended up being, you know, the same size as War and Peace. It was like 100,000 words.
Wow.
I started writing for local papers at rugby. I started writing plays. Rugby was a brilliant place to help cultivate that.
Yeah.
It's where I think I realised that if I wasn't going to be someone who everyone said was pretty, that was fine if I could be really funny and ambitious and clever. So that's when I kind of started, perhaps defensively.
I was
really
going to say, it's almost
that.
A sense of like a strong sort of mission to sort of go, this is what I'm going to be.
Yeah, yeah, this is who exactly. I'll be. Yeah. And also, if you're a good writer, that can't be taken away from you with a bad hair day.
And you also always have an argument. You know, you can always come back to people with something if you understand how to form arguments. And,
and I've got to say, to this day, you know, it's wonderful when you're falling in love with a man and he takes you by the face and tells you that you have the face of Aphrodite or you're the most beautiful.
Has that ever happened to you?
Whatever. Okay, some right. drunken,
yeah, maybe some drunken man.
But you know, when you have those moments of feeling like seen by a male gay, those moments are fun, but they've never ever topped the moments where I feel like my writing is like making people laugh or touching people or people are relating to it. So it's fun for people to think you're attractive. It is fun.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't make me feel as good as when people think I'm clever or funny.
One of your products that I know you're going to mention is something to do with switching off. I'm just wondering if you could talk us through the product and also if that's how you make time or shift your brain mentally to this is now off.
Yeah. So I love taking baths. Always have done. I find them such a treat. And I think there's something about, I'm a slave to my phone, as many people are, but especially when you're a freelancer, because it's your whole office really. And I'm so undisciplined with it and it's pathetic, but I really need to often do something physical that physically takes me away from my phone.
Yeah.
So the only things that really relax me are playing my guitar, because I can't play with one hand and be scrolling or checking emails with another. And another is having a bath, because I can't have my phone.
I would say the same things, but also adding massage to it. Like, if you're having an actual massage, you're like, the phone's over.
Such a treat. Yeah. I mean, the worst thing I discovered was urban massage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I just love the stillness.
Yeah.
And I love podcasts. I love having podcasts or even reading in the bath. And my products that I love for that, and I do spend, Sally Hughes, who obviously you all know is a brilliant, brilliant beauty journalist, and I do find that over the years I kind of have ended up, a lot of the beauty rules that I have, I've taken from Sally and from her work and her advice and her videos. And she says, always go cheap for shower and expensive for bath.
Yeah.
And also, you only need a tiny bit of bath oil. So it is really, you can make eke out. So it's a good treat, I think. I'll often get the Floris Rose and Geranium Bath Essence.
And it comes in a divine bottle.
The bottle is just so beautiful. And it's this like emerald green. It's just, I just love having it on my shelf. And then you only need a couple of drops of that. And then it kind of perfumes with the steam. Your whole house fills with this beautiful geranium floral scent. It's, oh God, I love it.
God, I'm going to buy it.
I know. I mean, it's very expensive. It's very expensive. But that bottle has already, I'm not even halfway through. And that's had, I've had that a year.
Right.
And then I also love Ren Rose Otto.
Yeah.
Again, because both of them aren't too oily as well, which is nice. So that's a real treat for me to have a bath with that in.
How hot do you like your bath water and how long are you in there for?
Do you know, it will always be like, you know, sometimes you run a bath or draw a bath. God, I love that verb.
Yeah.
And you get in and you're like, I finally got it. And you feel like you should like be given a prize.
I never get it.
I never get it. I always make mine too hot.
Yeah.
I do think it has to be slightly hotter than you think you want.
I like to feel slightly shocked when I first get in it.
Yeah, and also I quite like, because I am trying to zone out and I have a bath desperately, I'll do it right before bed. I do like the sort of meditative, hypnotic thing of kind of feeling, you know, when your head feels slightly heavy because it's so hot. That works for me.
But you know what? Whenever I run a really hot bath like that, or draw a really hot bath like that, I always think of that scene in My Fair Lady where they're going to wash her and the steam's billowing out.
Yeah,
and for some reason in my childhood, that made baths terrifying for me.
It's quite terrifying.
I really enjoy them now, but that scene just felt like someone was going to torture her or something. It was awful. So what's your relationship with makeup now? Because it's a tricky one. There are so many feelings around makeup and it being a lie or secret. How do you feel about makeup?
I'm in a great place with makeup now. It means I can dip in and out of makeup with a real autonomy and joy. I really love putting a face on, but it's not, I don't feel appalled anymore at the idea of colleagues or new lovers or you know, seeing me without face makeup. I don't feel like I owe it to them to provide them with a face that's perhaps more pleasing. That's a lovely place to get to.
For some people, they never get there. It's
I'm aware.
It's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah.
The first time you take your makeup off in front of a lover is hard.
I mean,
maybe not for you now, but when
it was for me for years, you know, it was like for my past relationships, for the first 3 months, I always say you'd know when I was in love because I'd have conjunctivitis because I would
because eye makeup is your thing.
I'd be sleeping in my eye makeup. My ex-boyfriend, I think he didn't see me without makeup for well over 3 months.
Okay.
And I would never do that now because I think that if a man hasn't got the balls to deal with my eyes without mascara, then he's not the man for me.
No. But the journey of life is going to offer up more terrifying
precisely.
Things.
But I am aware that some women, you know, you hear stories about women who've been married for 50 years who still get up before their husband does. And I don't judge them at all because I understand. I used to be that person and I understand why you get there. And I understand the feeling that you are covering up constantly who you are to the world and a great shame that one day you're going to be found out and feeling that the only way that anyone has liked you or listened to you or felt attracted to you is because of this big lie of mascara and lipstick. I understand that. I don't judge it. But I would, you know, and I still would feel more confident sitting here with you if I had makeup on, you know.
Yeah.
But I hope that most women I know will feel freed from that at some point.
Shame is a really interesting word, isn't it? Because it's one of those emotions. I think my psychoanalyst or psychiatrist told me once that shame is something you're not born in the world with. It's not one of the basic human emotions. It's something other people give you.
Exactly.
But people do get that. With makeup, it's a sense of if people are used to seeing you a certain way, you can feel ashamed when you don't live up to the version of yourself that you feel you've projected into the world.
The other problem is with women is that, again, I kind of go into this in my book, that when you're a man, it's a level of, like, attractiveness. The bar is so low. So what you need to do to be an attractive man is be nice, funny,
clean. Yeah.
Have a neat haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Brush your teeth.
Yeah.
And have a nice jumper on. And have a lovely smile. And maybe be, give or take, a stone average weight, but you know, be a bit chubby, fine, be a bit skinny, fine. That can warrant, you know, a dreamboat.
Yeah.
Whereas for women, that's not enough. The sky's the limit for women.
Yeah.
And it's not unheard of that, like, that I used to dedicate the same amount of time and effort and money into my looks as if it were my profession.
Yeah,
you know, as if I were trying to be a model.
Yeah.
And it's like, It would be mad if a man who worked on a paper or as an accountant or as a lawyer was getting a manicure every week, going to the gym every day, getting a spray tan done once a fortnight, spending this extraordinary amount of money on clothes, getting his body waxed within an inch of his life. It would be so insane. People would go, why are you doing that, Dave? You know?
Yeah.
That's such a waste of your time. No one's expecting this of you. But with women, for some reason, it's like, the way that we measure ourselves is up against people who it is their full-time job to look the way they look.
Yeah, it's very problematic, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's also a thing of smelling a certain way and feeling soft and
that.
Again, if it's your thing, enjoy it. But I think it's, you can't take that on. You can't take it all on. It can't all be your thing every day.
Exactly.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tell me then, with makeup, you are a lash person. Which mascara are you using?
L'Oreal Lash Architect,
right,
was recommended to me by my friend New, who's an actress, Vanessa Kirby. She plays Margaret in The Crown.
No. She's your friend. I love her.
She's great.
I love her.
You'll notice how fabulous her eyelashes are.
She's fabulous.
She recommended to me, she's got these huge, gorgeous big eyes. And she recommended to me when we were about 18, this mascara. And she said, once you use this, you will never turn back. And now every single woman in our group of friends, I think, still uses it. L'Oreal Lash Architect. It's in a silver tube. It's so difficult to open. It's shrouded in plastic. Never, ever used a mascara so good.
Oh, really?
It's bottom, top so and bottom lashes. Lengthening. Yeah, I do top and bottom with them. I mean, I have always put on about 6 layers.
Do you separate them?
Yeah, so I like mascara, and when I use fake eyelashes as well, I always use the same Eyelure pair.
Which Eyelure pair? Sorry to be
thinking. I use the length. I've got a packet here. I think they're 10. I can't remember which they are. Full set.
Okay, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll send you which ones they are. They're lengthening. They're, I don't like pre-glued. They're the one with the glue.
Yeah.
And I always put the glue on. Again, this is a tip from New. And then I let them dry for like 10, 20 seconds. Yeah, yeah. I love them telling a
beauty. No, no, no. I'm agreeing. I'm excited. Yeah.
And then I also trim normally the first one or two.
Yeah.
I think thickening for mascara is a lie.
Right.
Because to thicken an eyelash, you would just have to have, unless it's a tubular one, maybe it would work.
Yeah.
You just have to build outwards and outwards with more and more. So it's just like mascara clinging onto mascara. Yeah, yeah. So I don't think you can thicken them, but I do think you can lengthen them. So I try and go for long and separated.
Right.
And
like a fan.
Yeah, like a fan. And sometimes they'll build outwards slightly if I put on enough. But really, I think what looks best is when you go for long.
Yeah.
And that's why I do the same with my fake eyelash. So I don't want to have just like a big black thick.
No, and it's not nice when you can see the light shining off a fake eyelash. No, I hate that.
Whereas I like fluttery long lashes.
When you put your fake lashes on, are you then putting mascara on your lashes to bind them, or do you put them on top?
Both. So I put mascara on first, let my mascara dry for about 10-15 minutes.
Okay.
Because otherwise, I get it all over my fingers. And then I'll put my lashes on and then put mascara on top of that.
Oh, God.
Putting lashes on, and that will be for either a party or a photo shoot. Mm-hmm. That will be because, you know, I do want them to look quite dramatic.
Do you pay attention to your brows then at the same time, or is it your eyes?
I've never done anything to my eyebrows.
So you just leave them?
I just leave them. I've got a wayward eyebrow that drives me insane.
One hair or the whole brow?
It's just this, my left brow, you'll be able to notice it now. Yeah. Pitched up. Grows, the end of it grows like upwards.
No, this is a whole thing.
Oh, is it? So yeah. I have to trim it once a week.
Yeah, no, this is a fashion people are liking them. I can't remember what it's called, but it's apparently very youthful.
Really?
Have your lashes, the front bits going up. Again, mine grow up like a little bush at the front, and I have to trim them.
You've got like Audrey Hepburn.
No, I hate brows. My brows and I, long, complicated relationship.
Oh,
but
I love
them.
They
grow up at the front and I have to trim them. And sometimes I trim them too low and then I end up
with that.
It's a struggle. All right, let's talk about your eye makeup then. So you said that you were an eyeliner addict and you have now been convinced to try shadow. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so about 2 years ago probably, again, it was the great Sally Hughes. I listened to her talking about the joys of eyeshadow and why it's kind of softer. And two of my friends at the time did that thing where I tried eyeshadow for the first time and then did that slightly passive thing where they go, I love your eyes like this. This is the best they've ever been. Whatever you're doing now, do that again and again.
Yeah.
And two close friends, Pandora Sykes said that to me, and my friend Sarah said it to me. And I thought, oh, you guys think I wear way too much eyeliner. And then I said to them, do you think I wear too much eyeliner? And they were like, And my mum had always said it as well. I really
did. It's a bit like when you lose weight, though, and people go, you look great.
Yeah,
like,
I really did wear way too much.
Okay.
So then, now I'm this huge convert to eyeshadow. I just adore it. So I now, if I have a shoot, I'll put a tiny bit of eyeliner onto the pictures, but I just don't wear eyeliner.
So what's your colour? Do you have a palette you love?
If I want to do more dramatic for nighttime, I'll just do a like copper lid, just completely copper. And there's a great NARS. One called a duo called Isolde.
Okay.
I think it's that one. That's really highly pigmented. It's lovely. That looks great, especially if you've got a tan. I love that. And I think copper looks so cool and sexy with blue eyes.
Unreal.
And then there's a palette that I use every day by Chanel called Mystic Eyes, which is pale pink, a sort of silvery pale. It just comes out as a pale base, basically, like an opalescent base. And then a taupe brown and a chocolate brown.
Okay.
And it's all in this form.
Do you have loads of brushes then, or are you doing it?
I use one brush.
Which one?
One from NARS.
I'm
such a novice with eyeshadow. I still need to. That reminds me, I do need to go buy some new brushes.
Okay. One brush. I mean, I'm a bit of a brush person, so
right.
I'm like,
oh, you can tell me which ones to get.
I'll get out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brush. Love
okay,
brush.
Great.
Okay, tell me about scent then. So I've in my notes I've written here, you like food.
My stomach's rumbling as we speak. I love food.
You talk about food a lot. You write about food a lot. Yeah. You once wrote something in your newsletter, I think it was, about hot cross buns, was it? There was a long piece you wrote and there was a joy of food.
Hot cross
it made
buns.
Me really hungry.
Oh, I think I was writing about all the things that made me happy.
There we go, yeah. There we go, that's the one. Okay, I'm just imagining lots and lots of food. I'm picturing, so we're in Dolly's living room, sitting room, and there's a table, and I'm just imagining loads of people around here, lots of wine and that sort of thing, and food, and it all looks very homely. So, so you love food, you like cooking. Does that translate into perfume? Are you someone who goes, oh, I love that coffee, velvety, chocolatey perfume, or is it floral?
Oh, do you know what? I found out recently that there was a perfume that had just been launched. It's the smell of hot buttered toast.
Oh, what's that?
Imagine just shrouding yourself in that.
I've just tried a coffee one that's incredible. But it's blended with other things. It's beautiful. It's by Atelier Cologne, and it's called Café Tuberosa, and they do a whole gourmand range, and it's just clever. It's really clever.
Yeah,
they do vanilla, but their stuff is like, it's got loads of layers. So you immediately, when I spray it, people go, oh, coffee. But it's not just coffee. It's complex.
And coffee's so complex, exactly.
Yeah. It's got, it makes you feel things, and I quite like that about scent. What's your thing?
Well, do you know, I've kind of worn the same perfume since I was 18, which is a really unusual perfume, and I'm loath to tell anyone.
Go on, you have to say it.
Although I actually do want to tell people about it.
Okay.
It's so, first of all, because I want to be like altruistic and everyone should discover this beautiful perfume. Sorry, that is my stomach rumbling, if you can hear that.
Yeah.
but also because I've noticed that it's always on sale and hardly anyone buys it, and I often buy it secondhand on eBay, and I'm petrified it's going to be discontinued. So actually, I would like everyone to go buy it.
Okay, go and buy it.
So it's called Cornubia by Penhaligon's.
That's an incredibly decadent perfume to have when you're 18.
I know.
Was it a present at first, or did you find it?
I used to wear Bluebell perfume when I was a teenager, which is a Penhaligon's scent, which is like a very...
Kate Moss likes that one.
Oh, really? Yeah. I heard Sienna likes it, so I think maybe that's why I first asked for it for Christmas. It's like, I've always loved very old-fashioned scents, and I love... Bluebell was quite grassy, and it felt like a kind of, I don't know, like a 1940s. I loved it.
Yeah. And the bottle, again.
Oh, beautiful, yeah. Amazing. In fact, the Bluebell bath oil is one I love as well.
And quite affordable as well.
Yeah,
apparently
it
what?
Is. Apparently Amy Winehouse loved it as
apparently,
well.
Apparently, I was there last Christmas, and apparently, I think it was Kate Moss again, who went in and just buys like 10 of them and gives them to people for Christmas.
What a lovely present.
Yeah, nice.
Bath oil is such a good present because you often feel so indulgent buying it. It feels so decadent.
Every year when I'm buying people beauty Christmas presents, they usually get bath oil because
it's a lovely idea.
Can't really give someone a mascara, but the bath oil's like, treat yourself, enjoy your life.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't feel guilty about this purchase.
Exactly.
So I think I was in there trying my Bluebell perfume when I was a teenager, and then I found this other one that I think I just found the bottle quite enchanting. It was like with a circular glass stopper. I just thought it was so glamorous. And I just had never smelled a perfume like it when I put it on. Mm. And I still haven't smelled a perfume like it. And I still get people asking me about it. It's like...
Do you have it here?
Yes. Do you want to smell?
Can I have a sniff?
Yeah. I've got a perfume tray.
As Dolly runs the next room to her perfume tray.
Let
me smell. Yeah, don't spray it. I'll just sniff it out.
No. Have a spray. Put it on you.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It's lovely.
It's gorgeous, isn't it?
It's, Well, it does have an alcohol-y vibe to it.
Do you know what?
This
changes.
Is fitting in with my idea of who you are.
Such an old lush. It does change as...
It's almost got violet, maybe, and powder.
Yeah, it's as you go through the day, you keep smelling it because it has so many... It takes on so many different incarnations through the evening, which I love. And it's got like a very warm amber base note, which I love. And then they
That's
call it...
it.
Yeah. Then they call it oriental flowers, kind of float on top.
I find those... I know the categories, but I never use them to describe perfume because I feel like they're so confusing.
I know. But I do know now. I love this perfume. Mm. And actually, what is left of it by the end of the night, which reminds me of kind of sitting on night buses.
Mm. Smelling amazing.
So, what's left of it is a kind of this warm, sexy, very feminine smell that I can't quite describe. It's not sweet. It's just warm.
I was going to say, it's very amber. Feminine, isn't it?
Yeah.
But not in a cloying, annoying sense.
No.
Yeah, it's lovely.
So I just love it. It's my favourite perfume.
Do they actually make a bath oil in that?
Do you know they don't? They used to, and there's one currently being sold on eBay.
Penhaligon's, if you're listening.
I know. There's one currently being sold on eBay for like 40 quid, and it's from 1992.
Oh, God, so it won't smell of anything anymore.
Well, I don't know. I'm still like, should I get it? Because I love Cool Nubia so much, and there's... they only do the perfume.
Yeah.
That I often will eBay. It's like there's some soaps came up that were Cool Nubia, but it's just my favourite smell in the world. Yeah. And actually, I've tried to... There'd be moments in my life where I thought, new year, new me, new perfume. And I just always end up going back to
it. So you flirt with other ones every now and then?
I flirt with other ones. I'm in a monogamous relationship with Cool Nubia.
But you cheat.
And I've had flings with... Dosong by Dipti, which was given to me when I was a bridesmaid for my friend Sarah. So I love that one now, mainly because it just reminds me of that lovely day. So whenever I'll sometimes put that on, and just feel like I'm back in France, a day full of love. That's such a good idea, actually, for people's bridesmaids, I think, because it just will always transport them back to that.
Apparently, bypasses a bunch of logical thought mind processes and goes directly to your
that
emotions.
Doesn't surprise me, yeah.
So it's the most, it's more direct than music.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And then I also love Frederick Malle Portrait of a Lady.
Yeah.
It's very expensive, but I do love that. But again,
that's a cult fragrance though, people love that.
The only thing is that when I'm out and about, women come up to me like I did to you when you walked through my door today and I say, are you wearing Portrait of a Lady?
Yeah. People often ask me that when I've put... Actually, I was wearing about 3 different scents today because I tend to just go for that.
Mix them up, yeah.
But people often ask me when I'm wearing a lot of... So I think people equate it with that heady sort of, you know, perfume smell.
Yeah, it's lovely. But I do... I love that when I'm wearing Cool Nubia, people will go, oh, God, that's gorgeous. What's that smell?
Yeah.
It feels more, I don't know...
Unique.
Yeah.
So, talking about your aesthetic, sticking to that... Yeah. Tell me about your hair, because you're sporting at the moment like a kind of blonde, shaggy. I'm thinking Brigitte Bardot-y kind of long fringe.
That's exactly what I say to my hairdresser.
Is that what you're going for? Okay. Yeah. It works. That's what you're projecting.
I wish I had as much hair as Brigitte Bardot.
Oh,
God.
Well, most of hers was like, I think, dry shampoo or something. But tell me about your fringe, because when we were talking about the products that Dolly would name, number 3 was fringe.
Is that a product?
Yeah, but tell me about your relationship with your fringe.
Yeah, so I've always had... mainly very long hair. I cut it all off and then shaved it when I was about 22.
You shaved which part of it?
I had like a mohawk. So I cut it into a pixie cut, and then the greatest thing about cutting all your hair off is you're so much less precious.
Yes.
Because there's so little of it.
Yeah.
You could just cut into it. And it was my boyfriend at the time was the one who said to me, I think you should cut all your hair into a pixie cut.
Okay.
And I just adored this man so much. I was like, okay.
All right. I'll do it now.
And actually, my hair had been driving me mad for quite a long time because I'd had very long hair when I was a teenager. And then...
It can be cumbersome, having
it. It became cumbersome, and I think I was hiding behind it a lot, and I'd become quite obsessed with how I looked. And then I met him, and he was a real hippie, and he was like, just cut it all off. It would look great. Get like a twiggy cut. And I think I just in a moment felt like, oh, I want to be liberated. Yeah. You know, my hair felt like this big blonde ball and chain. And I think I just wanted to. And so I actually went to this hairdresser in Edinburgh. They offered vodka, had a shot of vodka. And I was like, in the morning. And I was like, okay.
In Scotland.
Scotland, exactly. Yeah. Welcome to Edinburgh. Just cut the whole damn thing off. And then kind of used me and my ex, just we used to just snip into it. And then...
Who is this man? He sounds mental.
It was a pretty mental time in my life. And then, yeah. So that was really... I would recommend every woman get all their hair cut off at one point, because there was one moment I remember walking down the road and I was like 22 with like both sides of my hair shaved and it was tufty on top with no makeup on and like my ex-boyfriend's jumper. And I was like, oh my God, the world is continuing to spin. I've been stripped of it all. and everything's fine.
The shorter I cut my hair, the fiercer I feel. That sounds almost the more feminine I feel, because I feel like I'm stripped back to my raw womanhood. It's like, this is actually, my hair is not my magic curtain.
And it's been so lovely now, because the idea now of like all my hair being cut off, when I was younger, that was like the worst thing that could happen to me, if someone kind of took all my hair off. And now I'd be like, well, had it all off before, you know. It did engender a great inner confidence with me having all my hair cut short.
So when did the fringe come then?
So then I regrew it, and then I've had it long kind of since my mid-20s.
You colour it, sorry?
Yeah, colour it, half head of highlights, and a kind of...
Do you go to anyone in particular?
Myler and Davis in Brixton are fucking brilliant.
Yeah. It's a really nice colour, it's not yellowy at all.
She's so good, this girl I have called Sam.
Yeah.
And she does my fringe. I won't let anyone cut my fringe off.
No, once you've found your fringe person, you can't go to anyone else.
She's so good. You have to book really far in advance.
Oh, really? Myler and Davis?
Yeah, they're in South East London. There's one in Dulwich, there's one in Brixton, there's one in Herne Hill, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're really good for blondes as well. Mm. Lots of my friends go there now. But I kind of hated my hair from my mid-20s onwards, because I'm like you, I used to have a lot of hair when I was younger.
Mm.
And I think all the kind of snipping and dyeing and all that stuff has just gradually over the years really thinned it out. So when I had this long, I liked having long hair, all my friends, even though I loved having pixie hair, all my friends were like, never get it cut like that again.
Okay.
Which makes me want to do it even more. They all keep, because I'm like, maybe I should get it for my 30s. They're like, no.
Yeah.
Now's fine. So obviously, I think people, maybe it was a bit too severe for my face. I don't know. I loved it.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't want to get it cut short again. I like having long hair, but it just hangs. I just felt like Hanson brother.
Mm.
Like, it was just like, it's like Kevin and Perry. It's just like so, I kept trying to zhuzh it.
Image of the Hanson brothers just popped into my head. Yeah, okay.
I kept trying to zhuzh it and I just couldn't zhuzh.
Yeah.
And then my friend Sarah, who I keep mentioning, is known for this fab fringe that she has. She has like a Jane Birkin fringe. She looks amazing. And she's always had it. And she was like, get your hair cut into a fringe because it gives your hair shape.
Mm.
And it looks styled and chic if you've got thin hair.
Because
if you've got an abundance of thick hair, if you're Jemima Khan or whatever, you can just wash and go and it looks gorgeous.
But I'm not the biggest fan of that either. I sometimes feel it looks a bit like just loads of hair. It's like Kate Middleton with her hair. I was so pleased when she got it cut off.
Yeah, me too.
It felt like a lot.
A bit wiggy.
Yeah.
You can't. It's easier to kind of just do whatever when you've got loads of hair.
And you've got straight hair, properly straight hair.
Yeah, poker straight.
Yeah, which is great.
So then I went and got this fringe. I did it gradually. I started with a gringe, a grown out fringe, which are kind of two pieces, and then I just ended up going for a straight fringe and then kind of shape it into my hair so it's more kind of 60s.
Yeah.
And it's just made me so confident. You know, when you get to a haircut, you get to a thing, or you get to a product or something in yourself, and you're like, ah, found it, there you are, that's it.
It goes back to finding your identity, like you were saying at the beginning. You know, you want to be an adult and you want to sort of, you know, that you're going to grow into something, you're not quite sure what it is, and then you find it and you're like, this is for me.
Exactly. And I now just feel, I love wearing my hair down now. I don't play with it as much because it's just, it hangs much better.
Yeah.
It looks thicker. It looks like there's a shape. It doesn't look messy as much anymore because it's got... So any woman who's got kind of long, straight hair that feels a bit like blech about it, I would recommend trying a fringe.
So that was the incredible Dolly Alderton. Thank you so much for listening to Beautiful Lives. If you liked today's episode, please do rate it and leave a review. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already so you don't miss any future episodes. I'll be back next week with a new guest, so see you then. Bye!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.